It's acknowledging the mistakes which have been made in terms of what we've done as government in the past, which all of us, we are fully aware of. Given that the land that we have acquired, we tend to be accused of being the implementers or the acquirers of land which is more at the periphery, and we are acquiring it at very high cost. We all acknowledge that the land is a very scarce resource, and the land that we should be acquiring, it should be strategically located, and we should not be disposing it without at least talking to each other as a government. What we have done as a department in partnership with the HDA is to develop a coherent and inclusive approach to land, which currently includes the framework that I'm talking about. And the issues at stake is around acknowledging that we have a number of legislation that are there which are governing in terms of the issues of land acquisition. It's supposed to help us in terms of dealing with such issues. So what I'm presenting to you is basically the framework that we are developing in the form of a practice note, which at a later stage will come back to the portfolio committee with the entire document. It has been taken for consultation in its municipalities and provinces. The objectives of what we are trying to do is around ensuring that provinces and municipalities are able to coordinate the land identification and acquisition process. We all acknowledge there has been a limitation around the fact that the acquisition and identification, it has been fragmented, emanating from the provisions of the current legislative framework. The other objective is around ensuring that we facilitate a process of identification and acquisition, which will eliminate the acquisition of land at exorbitant prices, which is usually done outside the mandate of the HDA, irrespective of the agreements that have been signed. We are also intending to improve the coordination with various sector departments, which are expected to contribute to the goal of sustainable human settlements programs like the land reform of this country, which has been tasked with the mandate of land acquisition. We also intend to eliminate the practice, which I think has been the process where you'll have land that is acquired by maybe the various spheres, but later on it gets disposed without contacting or without engaging with each other, specifically with the Department of Human Settlements and the Housing Development Agency regarding such portions. Our other objective is around improving coordination between the spheres of government and channel the allocations for land acquisition, because all of us, we know we have the two grants which are currently dispersed at the National Department, being the Human Settlement Development Grant and the Urban Settlement Development Grant, which also make a provision for the acquisition of land over and above the other sources of revenue which are available in the municipal space, where municipalities are able to acquire land using their own funding. We want to put a framework which grants the best option of a right to refusal to the Department of Human Settlement through the HDA in instances where an entity of government or a sphere of government wants to dispose land which we have identified as land that is suitable and well located, which will assist us in terms of achieving the goals of a human settlement. And lastly, while we want to define the parameters that will be used for the identification and acquisition of such land, because it's what we are all about as human settlements. The generic principles which we have highlighted is around the issue of planning, to say the principle of planning is very crucial in terms of the three spheres of government where we are able to plan. In terms of the legislative framework that are there, to say we should be vacationing plans where we are able to talk and say we have these portions of land which are strategically located and have been identified, and we are supposed to plan as a one team with the three spheres of government regarding the portions of land that we feel are suitable and well located. And we want to also encourage a principle of reinventing of funds, where we are looking at the allocations that have been given in relation to the grants that I've alluded to. And when we do the reinventing, there has to be value for money in relation to the acquisition that is made, and we should be conducting evaluations in light of maybe even negotiations regarding the portions that will be so acquiring. We acknowledge the principle of rehabilitation of land, because most of the portions which we have identified in the country, some of them we find them not usable, but there should be a mechanism of finding each other around rehabilitating it to make it suitable for human settlement development. And we want to encourage also partnership and principle of cooperative governance with all the spheres and the private sector regarding the acquisitions that we will be doing. We are acknowledging we have acquired since the department started, and in partnership with the HDA, which is the agency that has been tasked with land identification, the acquisition, and also the development. We have worked, and we are defining the parameters for identification and identifying the parameter that says it should be, when we acquire land, it should be land that is suitable, it should be having access to social amenities and economic opportunities, including the access to employment centers. We are saying within the parameters, we should identify land that shall promote the existing survival strategies of the targeted communities, and with the minimum possible impact on relocation, because we have identified the fact that some of the settlements that we are dealing with, it's communities that have taken maybe land to their hand and ended up putting up informal settlements in those places, and some of the portions of land which displaced themselves with land which are strategically located, but they are enabling them to survive within their communities. And we are looking at a parameter which says the land that we shall identify, it should be land that has access or envisaged commercial or industrial development within it. And it should be land that should have available infrastructure or future infrastructure where government is planning where we will have to upgrade maybe to a better ocean. We are also saying part of the parameters, it should be land that is suitable in terms of geotechnical circumstances, given that a lot of portions of land in the country, they may not be feasible because of the geological conditions. So if we are putting the parameter to say if land that is suitable, we would have had a consultation with the Council for Geoscience, which will help us in terms of identifying such portions. We are also putting key considerations for disposal of such portions, which I think it talks to the framework in relation to the fact that some of the portions that have been disposed in the past, it's land that would fail as a department, it's land that was suitable and which should not have been disposed. And we are putting key considerations for disposal, where we are saying all stakeholders shall consult the national department and offer the portions of land, especially those that are well suitable to the national department, before they actually dispose such portions in an open market. And we are basically putting a process where we are saying when you make such an offer, it should be done in writing, and it must contain the relevant information so that we can be able to prepare a register of such land and be able to engage the government regarding those portions, even around getting resources that will enable government to acquire such portions. We are putting institutional arrangements which are part of what is covered in the current legislation, be it the Housing Development Act and also the land agency, where we are basically saying we need to disperse such grant funding properly as government and be able to plan properly in consultation with the other spheres of government. We are putting a mechanism where we are saying at the national department we will be supporting the housing development agency when it's putting together the national plan, which will be the plan that we call a national plan for land acquisition. And we are going to support the housing development agency in terms of receiving some of the public and written offers on such land. And we are going to lead in terms of the development of the approach that we have alluded to in terms of the medium-term strategic framework, which is around encouraging the cooperation between all the spheres of government, even the entities. And we are also going to monitor the implementation of the practice notes that we have packaged and support provinces and municipalities in terms of identifying and acquiring such land. We will be consulting with the Council of Valuers, which shall assist the department and the ADA in terms of achieving the value for money when such parcels of land are proposed. We have put together what we call a joint evaluation task team, which is supposed to assist the department and also the housing development agency in terms of reviewing the plans that we have, which we are calling the National Multi-Year Land Acquisition Plan. It's plans which are alluded to in terms of Section 7 of the Housing Development Agency, but we are refining it further, given some of the challenges we've experienced over the past 5 years. In terms of the mandate, we are supposed, in terms of the HDA, we are supposed to advise and review the framework that we have prepared after a period of about 5 years so that we are able to guide the investment regarding a acquisition of land. So such a task team, joint evaluation task team, it's a task team that is currently existing, which we are improving and refining it further to say it has to assist the national department and government regarding the review of such plans, because funding has been dispersed in the form of grants and in the form of the municipal allocation, and the are challenges in some instances where we discover that land has been disposed without us talking to each other as government. So that joint evaluation task team is supposed to help in terms of engaging with provinces and municipalities, supporting the HDA regarding the intention to dispose land parcels. We are, as part of the joint evaluation task team, going to monitor the land acquisition transaction, especially in the residential property market, and table such reports as reflected by the provinces and municipalities, and further engage regarding a remedial action that needs to be taken or visible. And at the end, we are going to report regularly through the ACA to the human settlement MINMEC and the technical MINMEC so that we are able to measure whether we have made progress in transforming human settlements through the transactions that are in terms of land acquisition. We have put what we call it's the sanctions, which we think they should be applicable in terms of the framework, where we anticipate that there could be disputes in relation to departments refusing to engage with us regarding the right to refuse on the land that is suitable for human settlement, in the sense that it may not be an easy function in terms of pushing all the government departments to say before they sell a portion of land, they should be talking to us. But we are saying in the event that such happened, we should be able to engage with our minister in consultation with our MCs and be able to package reports which we are going to share with our other executives within COGTA, within Department of Rural Land Affairs and Rural Development, and also the presidency, as they are helping us in terms of planning and monitoring the targets that we have within human settlements. This is basically what I have here in relation to the framework. It's a document that we have not dispersed to all the provinces, but our intention is to share it with the members of the portfolio so that when we sign it off, our minister is fully satisfied that what we are undertaking to do is what will yield the results at the end of the day. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bukelezi, for that presentation. Maybe before I allow the members to probably ask some clarity, when is this framework going to be written? Do you know? Do you know, do you have the template?
We have part of the framework, we have this component which I'm presenting. The overall framework we are anticipating by January next year we would have concluded the consultation with provinces, so it should be ready as early as beginning of next year.
Thank you very much. Honorable Ghana, Honorable Kata, Honorable Bam, and Honorable Pat.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. And officials, just a few questions that I need to understand. Just on the first page or the second slide, you're talking about this being applied by provinces and municipalities. And obviously, the first question that comes to mind is what's the benefit of the national department and the state-owned entities? Because if you look at quite a lot of land parcels are held by government, I mean, national government, department, public works, defense, state-owned entities. And there has been presentation, or there has been things said in this committee that there are lands that are identified by public works or Transnet or whatever state-owned entity is owning, doesn't want to release it. But then this framework seems not to be touching on that. And it's only focused on municipalities and provinces. So I need to understand how far-reaching is this, you know. And secondly, it's the land that's in the province or municipalities that might be, let's say it's being sold for human settlements, but under private development. Because there's then that can be in the hands of the municipality, but then because of you want to create a new whether it's a town or a city, and you might want to sell to private developers, will that also be the land that will be identified, and you need to have as a department a first right of refusal on all the land that is in the hands of municipalities? That might also be earmarked for human settlement, but under private development. And the third question is around the cost or the value of the land and the involvement of the Rewa General in that whole instance. I see on the I think you called it the sanctions or the resolution of disputes. One thing that is not mentioned there. It's the possible role of the Vela General. What then becomes the role of the Vela General in this framework? Or does the Vela General doesn't have any role in it? And then the other aspect is around the parameters for identification. you are speaking about the land that already has existing infrastructure. Let's say it's just a land that there's no services or nothing in there. Does that mean that piece of land, insofar as this framework is concerned, will not extend there? Or you are looking at already serviced piece of land? Because for me, my reading of this statement that says that land shall have available infrastructure, both physical and natural resources, it's a bit confusing. I don't know what, when you talk of natural resources, are you talking about the gold and the other things, you know, because I don't know what other natural sources is the Department of Human Settlement interested in, because you're mentioning in here that the land that you want to identify must have natural resources, so I don't know what you are referring to. And then lastly, are you or is ADA looking at the reverse side? That is, instead of waiting for municipalities saying we want to sell, or the province saying the department. I saw the acting CEO, but it might be
the next presentation is presented.
Oh, the next one is sorry. But then let me just say the department, using whatever entity they might deem necessary to do this particular exercise, Are you waiting for the municipality, the province, and if my earlier input is accepted, national department or state-owned entities, to say we are selling land, therefore, we want, now that you are selling as a municipality, we want the best right of refusal. Are you going to say, we see this piece of land here, that we have checked, it belongs to the municipality. What is your intention? Regarding this, can we get it as a national department instead of waiting? Because what this thing says is that you wait for the municipality or the province to say we are selling land, and only then do you get the activated to come in and say, oh, because you're selling, sell it to us. If you are not selling, it seems like there's not that activating to say we want that piece of land as a municipality. Can you tell us that land instead of waiting for the municipality? I want to check what your response to that will be. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Guy. As we have questions, just remember that this framework is still a work in progress. It's coming back to the portfolio committee to deliberate on it in detail. They are just giving us the right on it. It's still a work in progress. Honorable Guy.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Ms. Buthelezi, for the presentation. I have been covered quite a lot of my points by Honorable Ghana, but just to add, especially on the US, on the grant funding, I just want to check, because currently the system that is being used when you want to purchase the land, you use the USDG. So when you talk about the grant funding, are you saying on top of the USDG, or there will be a separate budget meant to for land acquisition? And then you also mentioned that this framework will be ready by January 2016, and that is, in my view, already in the middle of the term or closer to 5 years. And my question is, when is your 5-year term ending? And the last one is, I mean, the task team, I would like to know what is the task team consist of. Thank you.
Very much, Honorable Pan.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Ms. Buthelezi, for the presentation. You have been wise in bouncing it with the Human Settlements Portfolio Committee. Unfortunately, Honorable Ghana has made a clean sweep of all the questions that you might have wanted to ask. But having said that, land is one of those important commodities in the country. It is nice that some widening up has taken place, because it has created a lot of unease and displeasures in a lot of communities. Now, I want to find out, seeing that this is work in progress, this joint evaluation task team, does it work in communication or in tandem with the Department of Public Works and the state-owned entities and the municipalities? And after that, South Africa is such a vast country. How do you identify these lands, these pockets of land? Do you communicate with the local municipalities or the public works, or how do you scout, how do you know where there is land available? Or is there a database where you check against? Also, the Valuer General's role that has been covered, how do you deal with the land claims? Or how have you been dealing with the land claims, or how does the joint committee hope to deal with the land claims and the land issues that have arisen or that may come up? Also, how have you been identifying, how have you been working in order to acquire these pieces of land before you set up this testing? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Baker.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I just want to expand a bit on the question that Honorable Bam has asked. On slide 11, regarding where you see the public written offers on land that is officially located, that can be used at the human settlement sites to dispose of land. I find that a bit concerning. When I was a local councillor, I used to watch my local newspapers very, very carefully. And every time there was an alienation of land and in the paper, I would go down to the municipality and go and check where was this land. Because, as you know, those notices don't give you the physical location. They give you the stand number, and nobody knows stand numbers and where these things are located. And 99% of the time, it was prime land that was being sold off for a song, which is, unfortunately, all these corrupt practices that happen on the ground. Municipalities selling land off to their friends and whoever and sundry. In fact, we even had cases where land was sold off for 1 rand in a written agreement. And if you go there today, it is the most expensive real estate property in the town of Secunda, where houses are being sold off for millions and the land was sold for 1 rand. Now, what recourse is there when things like this take place? And as Honourable Dam asked, is there some kind of system in place where alienation of land is taking place in municipalities? Is there an alert system that AJAC can then say, okay, this municipality is selling this land off, let's go check if it's what it is, where it is, if it's suitable for us? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable
Pastor. Please, I want to wait your time. It's only one question of clarity. I would like to get this clarity on the involvement or partnership of two departments. One is the Department of Environmental Affairs, which who might at any stage maybe decide that this land was it really suitable for this, or it must not be discovered later that it was not suitable for human settlement. And then the other one is the Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry. Because there is a possibility that sometimes prime agricultural land might be very suitable for the human settlement, and that contradiction, maybe they need a common understanding between the departments. That's the clarity. Thank you, sir.
I'm handing over back to you, Ms. Mutelezi, to respond to the question and explain in detail, therefore, what is the place right now that is working, that the framework is still in progress. What is that is guiding the province to the municipalities, and why do you feel that probably it's not effective as it should? Over to you. Thanks, Chairperson. Maybe I should introduce myself before I pose questions to Mr. Sadek. I'm Abbas Mukalse, replacing Honorable Mtomongwana in the Portfolio Committee. On your fourth page, Mr. Taylor, your presentation speaks about the consultation with Geoscience Department or stakeholders. I just wanted to know, because in some instances, in some communities, where communities have taken the land for themselves, they are told, unused land, they are told by municipalities that they have settled on top of the land that has been maybe a threat on some stuff that might hurt them. Like in the mining area, that land couldn't have been occupied. But you found out that that land was long unused and communities took the land. And then how do you deal with the land that has been taken by communities, and in terms of selfing and in terms of giving them the necessary services or encouraging municipalities to speed up services on those lands? And then the exorbitant amounts that municipalities are also charging
things in terms of, you know, making land available to people to buy. How do you advise on that? Because some can't afford. You can agree with me that land is a very important commodity to our communities, and people need land to survive. Thank you.
Ms. Mutelezi, and the elder officer, can you respond?
Madam Chair, we'll hand over all the specific questions to Ms. Mutelezi to respond. But I want to start with the generic one. The question about what is the current standard operating procedure when it comes to acquiring land. You will see that you'll notice that every municipality has its own acquisition plan. Every province has its own acquisition plan, and provinces who are using HFDG grants to acquire land will follow the housing code on acquisition of land. We don't bank land at a provincial level. What we do, we buy it for development, for unit development. But we've seen instances where municipalities do buy the land and keep it and bank it. Municipalities are allowed to use the USDG grant to buy the land. That's what they are using currently. They're using USDG to buy the land. We've seen the city of Cape Town, they just purchased the piece of land recently, last month, in the month of June. We've seen Swane disposing the land. It was in the newspapers. We've seen a number of provincial departments acquiring land. What we've picked up, I think most of the questions that have been raised here, is that that system is not working well for us. Is too fragmented, and in some cases we question the zeal of the land because we're not involved and we're not defined these things, and they are allowed to do it currently. But you will see it in the presentation by AGA as well, the land parcel that we've acquired over the years and what we are also planning to acquire, including the state-owned land. For instance, the general piece of land in Swakip, we want to buy that piece of land even though the city of Cape Town is not interested anymore. But we still want to buy it because we feel that it can bridge, it can ease the housing challenge that we're faced with in Ilisha and Mitchell's Bay. But it's in the list of land parcels that LTA will be buying in the current financial year. You'll see it there. We also have quite a number of other pieces of land are owned by national departments like Dobet. You will see that in the presentation that Lucian is going to make, that piece of land is there as one of the parcels that we want to acquire. We try to manage this process very tight so that land parcels don't get invaded. So we try to keep it quiet, because when you publicize it too much, land gets invaded, and we've seen invasion in Denel, we've seen invasions in Swakit and other pieces of land. But we've looked at the current arrangement and we came to one conclusion that it doesn't work for us, and sometimes we ask questions about it when it's too late. Land has already been sold or land has already been purchased. For instance, some people are asking questions whether the piece of land that we purchased in Cape Town is worth 400 million rand. And now it's already, the transaction has taken place, so we have to go and do the verification. But if all these things were managed properly and there is a central place where all of these things are done and we can do the verification, we can do the evaluations and we can check and recheck whether this is a competitive price for us, the buyers, it's also a competitive price for the seller. All of those things have to be done upfront. The geotech variations, sometimes we buy the land and only to discover that only 50% of it is usable. The other 50% is not usable. So you have to do all of these assessments. You have to do the feasibilities. You have to do the geotech evaluations upfront before you buy the land. You don't get into that process after he has purchased the land. So we felt that some of the acquisitions that NTA has made for us, remember NTA, in terms of the Act, the bigger part of the money is to acquire land. You read the Act. The bigger part of the HDA mandate in the Housing Act is to acquire land for human settlement. So we discussed this with Treasury, and Treasury were of the view as well that let activate the ADA mandate. Allow ADA, anyone who wants to buy land, you enter into an arrangement with ADA so that they can manage that process. But in managing it, all the players, all the IGR structures have to be consulted. We're not acquiring land to bank. We're acquiring land because we want to achieve our objective. We want to integrate our communities, and we want to achieve social integration. We want to achieve economic integration, and that's why we introduced the draft master social plan that Nathan has talked about. But we do have a pipeline of land parcels that we want to achieve. But in some instances, you will notice that the land gets acquired in order to spend the budget. It was not in plans in the beginning of the year. And now all of a sudden, towards the end of the financial year, because the budget is not performing well, then we buy land that we didn't plan for. So we want to make sure that all of those things are not happening anymore. And we must have a certain phase where we manage all of these things. We do have land audit in various provinces. We know who owns which parcels of land, the province and the municipality, but it's not properly coordinated. The HDA have managed to come up with a map which tells you by municipality, by region, and by province who owns which parcel of land. And they've got that map, and they still have updated yesterday. I talked to Johan Mini, who is managing the GIS aspect of that, and they wanted to review the FDF of municipalities, to look at the FDF of municipalities, the special development and work of municipalities. Every municipality, you are able to tell who owns which piece of land within that particular locality, and that information can be, we can collect it, and maybe share it with the committee. But this is sometimes sensitive information, and we try as much as possible, you know, to keep it very close to our chest. There was a question about land claims. I'll leave it to Ms. Kutelizi to deal with that. How do we deal with issues of land claims? And what is the current process? I think I've already explained that provinces are allowed to acquire land using the housing code. If they are buying the land from the housing fund, the Joint Settlement Development Grant, they will use housing code. It starts with land. The reason why you want to buy that piece of land is because you want to get it into your five-year plan, you want to get it into your IDP, you want to get it in your build performance, what we call it, the BAP program, which is a three-year plan. So every land parcel that you buy, it must go to the built environment performance plan. This is what we want to do in the built environment space. And these are the projects that we're going to package. And as we know, it takes not less than 3 years or 36 months to package a human settlements project. So we have to start with the planning early. We have to start with acquisition, deal with bulk infrastructure, do your environmental approvals, your planning approvals before you get into the actual building. So land packaging or land acquisition is part of that planning exercise, which is a 3-year planning exercise, or your built environment performance plan, or your IDP planning, if you like. So we need to be asking all of these questions. When you buy this land, was it in the IDP? Is it planned for your built environment plan over the next 3 years? Is it going to be utilized for human settlements? And how much of it is usable? What are the densities? What are the yields? What is it going to yield? Those are all the questions that we need to ask upfront before we buy land. Sometimes we ask them post-fact, which is not a good thing to do. I will leave all the other questions to my colleagues, to Neville and Lantan, to respond.
Thank you, Chair. Just in terms of the current process in relation to the national sphere, in terms of the delivery agreements, we have an existing joint evaluation starting between ourselves, rural development, public enterprises, and public works. In terms of that process, cabinet and the national sphere, all state-owned company land, public-owned national public works, where they want to dispose of it, the National Department of Human Settlements has a first right of refusal. So they make it available to us. So, for example, public enterprises, Transnet, want to, on a periodical basis, they want to dispose of land. They then issue that list to us. We then give it to the HDA. The HDA then does an evaluation, and we then based on suitability and the integration consultation with provinces and municipalities, we will then make an offer. The one issue that has come up there is that in relation to state-owned entities, land and the HDA through and been requested, there's this issue around fair value versus market value. So the state-owned entities want to dispose of the land at market value. We've indicated fair value, and there's a material difference in relation to that because fair value takes a socio-economic perspective in relation to that. So that's the current process. So at the national sphere, there's pretty much a coordinated, managed process, particularly in relation to the one issue that I indicated. The contestation is particularly between municipalities, provinces, and SOEs, and that's the relevance of this practice note. Because as Acting DG has indicated, you find a municipality selling land and at the same time using HSDs or USDG to buy land. You know, and that's a contradiction. So, for example, ministers raised this with a particular municipality where we've seen a substantial amount of disposal, and we've indicated. I mean, one issue, particularly in relation to the floor, is that we always get told, well, we're a sphere, and if national issues are directive, then they're not bound to do that. Just the last point, in relation to municipalities, particularly municipalities, the legislation there is Section 14, which is of the MSMA, which indicates that land must first be made available to human settlement or for socio-economic or provision of basic services. And through this practice, now we're wanting to reinforce that. Because I think what we need to be clear about is that there is this contestation that one finds where, as human settlements, you find a community that's residing on a piece of land, the municipality or the province has determined that it's industrial or suitable for retail, and those kind of contestations. So yes, it's a healthy conflict, but it's an issue that one says that yes, there's a particular socio-economic objective that we pursue in relation to human settlements, and if not outside of what we do. Shallow undermining is a problem. So you find in a number of areas, particularly in housing and some of the other provinces, where communities do locate themselves or find location on shallowly undermined land. Our and it's a complex problem, because in relation to that, post 94, we've introduced a stricter set of technical and geotech conditionalities, whereas in the past it was not a major issue. So, for example, Bekkersdal is a very good example, where a large portion of Bekkersdal sits under shallowly undermined, unsuitable in relation to that. Now, the issue is, it's not an either or, and there's no choice. It's about communities and it's about human lives, and that's the issue that we determine. So in many respects, where communities do find themselves located on mine land that is shallowly undermined, there has to be relocation that occurs, and that particularly becomes a major issue around some of that land, particularly in housing, is considered to be well located. So large portions of the West Rand and the East is there. Thanks, Chair.
They asked, most of the questions have been answered. I think the critical one that I would like to talk to is the issue of how we are working with the HDA. We have the provisions which are in terms of the Section 7 of the Housing and Development Agency, where the agency would prepare a plan which will cover the portions of land that they are going to acquire. We support them in relation to ensuring that we have the agreement signed with the provincial department. And where there are instances where there are differences, we come in and support them in relation to engaging with the relevant HODs, escalating the issues to the MC. The other question relates to the issue of the consultation, which I think Neville has spoken to in relation to the issues that are there in terms of the Council for Geoscience. The honorable member is quite right in relation to the challenges that we come across, because most of the time it's areas where you'll have informal settlements. And I think part of the detail will come up in the next presentation in relation to how do we deal with such. But what we are trying to encourage as part of the principle for this practice note is that there should be consultation with communities, because oftentimes it's situations where we say land is not feasible, for example, the area around Alex, where people are sitting next to a riverbank and we are saying you should not be residing there. We should be having those consultations as the three spheres of government, which I think what we are trying to encourage through the practice notes is that let there be those educational campaigns, let there be a consultation regarding which portion of land are feasible. Because currently, I think the maps that we talk about, which are currently in terms of available as part of the housing code, they reflect some of the portions where we have geological circumstances, areas where you have dolomite, where you have the areas around the Eden Cape of the southern condensation areas where we say you should not be developing in this area, that be specific. What we are trying to do is to encourage the information that is lying out there from the private sector to save information that should be gathered, be available within the maps that we are updating on a regular basis. But that also becomes part of our concept around the master plan to say we should not be having a situation where we say it's municipalities, it's provinces who are giving us these portions as they feel like in faith. The example of the one rent which we are talking about, should the country had had a master special plan, we would have known that it's land in these areas, it's not supposed to host a one rent like it happened, but we would have known whether it was suitable for human settlement development. Maybe we would have prevented it, but we are acting after it has already occurred. So in some of the instances, it's more around the consultation between the three spheres of government. Hence, one of our key principles is around the consultation with sector departments and also the three spheres of government. The area of the testing, I think I've alluded, probably it's just enhancing the existing testing that will be put in place, which we currently already have. It's enhancing it to such an extent that all the relevant sector departments who are supposed to play a role, they are able to participate. I think we'll take note of, I'll put some of them as suggestions coming from the portfolio in relation to the inclusion of environmental affairs, but agriculture is currently serving in the current team. The other one of the system of checking the land is, I think it's information that from the support of the ADA, we have the GIS technology which is assisting us in terms of identifying this portion, like the member spoke about not knowing with the property description, so it becomes difficult. So if we are using the GIS technology, we are able to deal with the specific details of the portions of land. The issue of land claims, I think, is one of the areas which is going to be difficult in the new era, given that the government has decided to reopen the land claims. In the past, what we had dealt, how we had dealt with it was in relation to allowing a process of consultation regarding portions, because within the land claims process, they will prepare what they call is a prima facie report, which sort of gives a face value of what the case that they are researching on. They will gazette such a report in the government gazette and tell us that we have portion X which is claimed by community Y, and we are inviting all interested parties to indicate whether they are in support or they are opposing the claim. So as a department, we'll be able to embark upon the process where we are engaging with the land claims and put together a submission that basically talk to what is it that is our issue as a department. But looking at the fact that the land claims is being reopened, I think we are still going to come up with a better mechanism of dealing with the issue of land claims, because it could be claims that are basically even targeting the areas where we already have settlements and we've already settled people, and if a person is saying I'm entitled to that portion of land, we'll have to find a mechanism within the ambit of the law to deal with it. The role of the Valuer General I think the challenge which has been there, which I think we are trying to deal with as the department and the HDA, is the issue where you have exorbitant prices being put as part of the valuations coming from the land, current land owner who's saying maybe my portion of land is worth so many millions, whereas as a department, maybe we'll stand our own valuation, because at the end of the day, you end up with two valuations, which gives you maybe two different prices. So where we are, what we are envisaging as the role of the valuer general is in terms of giving us an opinion whether the valuer is really honest in relation to what has been put on the table. And then as the council that is registering the valuer, it should be able to deal with valuers which are giving us reports which are making government to lose more money. So when we're putting it as part of the institutional arrangement, our intention is basically to deal with such instances where the reports are telling us outrageous prices which as government we may not be able to deal with. And lastly, Chair, I think the issue of whether the practice note is applicable in the three spheres of government, including the state-owned entities. The intention, I think, with the current practice note, which we wanted to issue as early as beginning of the current financial year, it was intended to deal with the issues within a government, where we are saying we are looking at examples that the SMDG has alluded to, where municipalities are selling the land at such prices and it's giving us challenges because it's land that would have been bought through our grant. So the intention was to do that way for the practice note, but the overall framework that I'm saying it will be available by January next year. It will be comprehensive in terms of dealing with the issues that the member is talking about in terms of including the state-owned entities. I think I'll post this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Botelius and the officials. Honourable members, I think let's go to the next presentation, because if you're listening, there's cross-correlation of issues from this presentation to the next one, which some of the questions and answers might be answered by the next presentation. So maybe without wasting any time, let's go straight to that presentation that the HDA is going to do for us, and it might answer some of the questions that you have. Over to you, HDA.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members, colleagues. Thanks for the opportunity as well. And Chair, we have outlined clearly that there's going to be some interrelatedness in terms of certain aspects of our presentation. And we'll try not to do a repeat of some of the issues that Mr. Taylor from the department has already alluded to. But what is key from HDA perspective, Honourable Chairperson, is the alignment that is very critical on our preservation outline. Would like to deal with medium-term strategic framework and acquisition targeting, which is the most important aspect of our land acquisition strategy for the entire sector. But embedded to that, Chair, is the whole issue of lack of capital funding that the agency does not have. So the framework comes very relevant for the SDA in terms of its work. We'll then reflect on the progress, which I think is critical on MTSF and acquisition targeting, and also to reflect, Chair, on the current land pipeline, because this is a very important aspect that for us to be effective as a sector in terms of our different product offerings, we require different policies for current pipeline, and we'll reflect on that. Also, the land planning, release and acquisition constraints in dealing with ad hoc planning, I think Mr. Tedder has also cited the challenge. Part of this framework is to try and centralize our approach in the manner in which we do land acquisition targeting, particularly in terms of our land planning and the release of acquisition of our land, and constraints that are associated with that. This is part of the framework that we're putting so that we can begin to centralize our approach into one center. Neville, if you can just play your thing. So that we conclude on that. So I'll ask Lucien to touch on that and reflect specifically on our targeting and the constraints and the approach that will also form part of the overall framework that Mr. Chess has made reference to. Over to you, Lucien.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Honorable Chair, members,
and colleagues. Yeah, indeed, I think some of the unanswered questions would definitely be answered as part of this presentation. In terms of the introduction, I'll be touching on issues of land planning, identification, and how we identify land generally. But I think as part of the introduction, I just want to specifically mention that the identification and acquisition of land is a concurrent function between spheres of government, and therefore it's not necessarily a function that lies specifically with the agency. Now, what we are saying going forward is that land planning, including acquisition by provinces and municipalities, should in the main be aligned to the National Development Plan, and also the current working on a master special plan, and we are saying that municipalities must honor that in terms of the identification and also acquisition of land, including special investment framework and also the various strategies, economic development strategies within provinces. And I think as part of the MTSF target in terms of creating 1.5 housing opportunities, we are saying that the focus, key focus in terms of land identification and also acquisition should be land that responds directly to our informal settlement upgrading program, mining towns interventions, and also catalytic projects. In other words, projects that are meant to yield maximum or in fact more housing opportunities than necessarily has been the case before. And we are also saying that prioritization must also be given to land that would help us to achieve our affordable rental housing programs, including social housing and CRU. And again, also there should be land planning should also address issues relating to housing backlogs in specific nodal areas and specific localities. Now, nationally, Madam Chair, you would notice that from 2011, I think, to 2014 in the various provinces, there are certain provinces where there's been a decrease and in some instances increase in the housing backlog. Notably in Gauteng, in 2011 you had a housing backlog of about 628,000, but in 2014 just over 802,000. And we are saying that for us to be able to address that housing backlog and based on various densities, I'm just citing Gauteng as an example, you need more than 18,000 hectares of land to address the current housing backlog. But because Gauteng is a metropolitan area, maybe we may not necessarily work on lower densities of 300 square meters per step, but maybe we may want to look at 100 square meters and also 200 maybe as the minimum. But in instances where the intention is to develop densified projects, especially rental housing development, we can even go lower than 100 square meters, and for that you need approximately 6,000 hectares of land. But in the main, the purpose of this slide, Madam Chair, is just to indicate that in the main, if you work on the 300 square meter stand as an average, we need more than 12,000 hectares of land actually to, not 12,000, but we need significant land actually to be able to deal with the backlog in the various provinces. The next map is just an indication of the areas where we challenge specifically in terms of the housing backlog. The red part or the red highlighted area, that's your Gauteng, KZN and Western Cape, that's the areas where we are challenged significantly in terms of the housing backlog. These are areas where the housing backlog is greater than 300,000 housing units, and therefore, in other words, the purpose of this slide is primarily to indicate that that is where we need land the most than the other areas. I mean, in Northern Cape, for instance, the housing backlog is not that significant, although we are mindful that lately with the development of new mines in the area, there are isolated areas where we need to come up with the interventions in terms of land availability to address the development of mining and associated housing needs and therefore land in those areas. At the moment, Madam Chair, provinces and municipalities don't do long-term planning for land acquisition, and they are not doing it in the medium-term to long-term planning for land acquisition and also asset. And in some instances, I mean, some provinces, if you check that, if you check their business plans, there's even no budget allocated for land acquisitions. In certain instances, some provinces would even budget just 1% of their HSDC grant funding for land acquisitions. And especially the provinces that are in the main, in the metropolitan areas, and they are challenged specifically in terms of land. Our view is that they need to budget more for land acquisitions. And at the moment, as has been indicated, the agency doesn't have capital funds to acquire land, and we depend mostly on provinces and municipalities for land acquisition funding. We are also saying that strategic planning for land acquisition and assembly must meet the MTS target in relation to the 10,000 hectares. But as things stand now, we are not sure whether that target will be met. This is the MTSF land acquisition target, Madam Chair. The target is 10,000 hectares of land, released or well-located land that's rezoned and released for new development targeting specifically the poor and low-income households. The action that is required, Madam Chair, is that we need to fast-track the release of well-located land for human settlements development. Now, this slide in the main touches or indicates briefly progress to date in especially 2014 and also 15 and 16. In total, we've acquired over 1,000 hectares of land in 14 and 15. That is privately owned land. In other words, that's land where there was an exchange of money. And in relation to state land, that's the release of publicly well-located land for human settlements, there has been 2,685 state land that has been released mainly by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform for United Settlements Development, and identified that this is a continuous process. There was a question raised around whether we wait for municipalities to say they are selling land before we can raise our hands. No, we don't do that, but the identification process is a continuous process. At the end of the day, we want to be able to say in any municipality what land has been identified as to cover for human settlements, hence the number is a bit bigger. But for the current financial year, at the moment, we have acquired 131 hectares of land, and what has been donated to date by state custodian properties in the main, again, rural development and land reform is about 411 hectares of land. And in total, what has been identified to date is just over 9,000 hectares of land. So for us to be able to meet the MTSF target at the moment, we still require about 5,700 hectares of land. Now, this is just a comparison province by province in terms of land acquired and state land released. Now, in the Eastern Cape, as an example, we've acquired in 14 and 15 financial year just over 7.9979, that's just 7 hectares of land, and that's Transnet land, I can confirm. And what has been donated is over 1.8 hectares of land, and what has been identified is about 128 hectares. Now, for 14 and 15, in other ways, in terms of land assembly, broadly speaking, we are saying that we've managed to assemble both in terms of acquisition and also just in terms of acquisition, just under 2,000 hectares of land. If you take Limpopo, for instance, as an example, in 14 and 15, there's been lots of land identified but not acquired. But if you look at the current financial year, there's 131 hectares of land that has been acquired and then donated to that state land is about 411. Now, unfortunately for us to be able to meet or to come up with a credible national land pipeline, at the moment, as things stand, land planning and information, unfortunately, some of the info is currently with municipalities and the provinces and is given on an ad hoc basis, necessarily because of the funding limitations of the agency. Now, some of the pipeline, as I'm going to indicate now, reflects proposed acquisitions, and that may not in certain instances be realized this financial year due to private acquisition. In certain instances, you find that you are not able to agree with the landowners on the prices. In certain instances, funding reallocations by provinces is a matter that gets delayed. Sometimes it's so, or sometimes you don't get the necessary provincial approval. And then in relation to public land, the process itself, the red tape is still long, notably, Madam Chair, with respect to the National Department of Public Works. And unfortunately, they are the ones that are holding all the custodians of key land parcels that we require well located in the country. Now, that would obviously have an effect in terms of whether we achieve the MTSF land target or not. Now, province by province, Madam Chair, this is an indication of where we intend acquiring land and broken down into privately owned land and also publicly owned land. Privately owned land, there's a fee payable, there's a charge payable in the Sandes River Municipality, that 12 hectare property. We are also indicating why we're buying land in that specific area in field development, for instance, in Sandes River. And we're also indicating the potential number of units developable in that specific area. Alibar North area, 45 hectares, and that's again an extension of an existing land settlement. And we planning to do 1,800. The indicative number of units are where there has been some planning done. The informed by what has been planned, and in certain instances where there has only been feasibility studies done, we are taking into account the development potential of the specifics of land, noting densification in practice as well. So in certain instances, we find, especially in the rural areas, we find that there's a lot of land that we are getting for release, but we should not necessarily yield a lot of ice, primarily because, I mean, the densities in the rural areas are necessarily low. Buffalo City, in Buffalo City, in East London, there's 167 hectares of land that we're targeting to acquire, working with the Eastern Cape and also in the coastline of our area. That's the Eastern Cape. Then in the Free State, Vosloorus, that's a priority provincial municipality, and it's also one of the rapidly growing towns in the Free State province. 118 hectares of land. This specific land parcel is forms part of other land parcels that we purchase in the same locality or area, and that's why we are saying we're planning, in fact, to develop a catalyst project in that area because of the Zambela challenges. I think those challenges are well known to the local community, and we will be using the 118 hectares as part of the other land parcels that we've already acquired in the area. That's the Free State. And in Houghton, we're not so much involved in private land acquisitions in Houghton, but our plans are advanced in terms of us taking over that responsibility. Rensco, that's a piece of land next to the FNB Stadium, 98 hectares, is earmarked for integrated residential development program. We're targeting to develop a high-density development there. We're proposing 4,200 units. This is a public works land, and plans are advanced in terms of getting the land released. And basically, yeah, this is the typical transport-oriented development where we are saying we want to take advantage of the transport-related infrastructure in that area, which is kind of currently underutilized and is only utilized when there's studies and big gains in the area. But already we've spoken to Prasa, and they are saying they would support human settlements development in the area, just to ensure that there's maximum utilization of the current government investments in terms of transport infrastructure. Lugo Prison, again in Houghton, that's another property that we are making. We've already commenced discussions with public works. Well located land in a very good area. If we get it, we should be able to develop over 6,000 housing units. And in KZN, Ebangeni, that's a property that has recently been acquired and next to Richards Bay, and is already one of the projects that we would want to be approved as mega projects because of the scale, the number of units that are proposed there. Jozini area, that's an area that's well known for tourism, or is it tourism attraction area. There's been discussions between us and the province and also the municipality. We are in the process of acquiring the over 100 hectares of land in that area. Shell Beach in KZN, Port Shepstone area, that's one of the most well-located land next to the other famous beach in the area. And it's already planned, and we would we enter our foot to get the property also acquired. And our view is that if we are able to put low-income people in that area, we would actually have done our work in terms of, you know, our spatial restructuring imperatives. Limpopo, but that's the mining town. It's also a provincial growth node. There's 107 hectares of land that we are looking at, which can yield over 4,000 housing units, running 26 hectares. That's part of another or other land parcels that has been released by government. And in the Elias Mutualegi area, there's the 411 that has been released. It was again the lot of public land that we negotiate with rural development and land reform for the release. Malamulele is also on the map there, and that's land that we are about to get it released by rural development and land reform, primarily for hanger upgrading purposes. But in Malamulele, again, 85 hectares of land also released for informal settlement upgrading purposes. In the Marble Hall area as well, there's some land that we looked at. In Mpumalanga, the municipality in Middelburg, the two private land parcels that we looked at, and they are, one is required for informal settlement upgrading, the other one is required for formalization of the new township. The two land parcels are located in the mining area, mining Middelburg, which is currently experiencing mass in-migration of people in search for economic opportunities. In terms of public land, we're also looking at land in the Ngangala and Ganeo growth areas for new township extensions and also tenure upgrading. Northwest in Madeleine, Press Municipality, there's a 105-hectare property planned already that we're in the process of finalizing the transition. It's also a catalytic project for the Northwest Department of Human Settlements. In relation to public land, we are also looking at National Public was land in the Gamir Drift area, in Perez as well, for informal settlement upgrading purposes. In the Northern Cape, I've indicated that there isn't much land that's required in the area, but because of the new mines in the area, Kuruman area, we're also looking at acquiring land, 125 hectares, and also in the Uppington area, we're looking at the facilitating the release of the 595 hectares of land, and also in the Jankam North area. In the Western Cape, the first one, that's the former Southwest property that was acquired by recently by the city of Cape Town, we're looking at that as well. In terms of validating that specific transaction, we have visited the site, we know where the land is, we've got our own views about it, and also the Blaubeckstrand property, which is the land in the Latin area, is owned by the National Public Works Department. There is ministerial approval already to release that land to the agency, and again, we would want to see low-income people going into places or residing in properties in areas that they would not necessarily be able to stay had it not been for the current propertyization or property market. In the Wingsfield area, not very far from here, there's the 195-hectare public works property as well. Here, I just want to indicate, in relation to the one issue raised around the land claims, there's about 50 hectares of that 195 that has been claimed by the Ndabeni community, and the intention there is that as we develop the 195 hectares, we are also accommodating, in fact, in terms of the development plan, we would also want to accommodate the Zemens community as well, as part of the development. So for that, we're working with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. In the Strand area, there's small property infield, very much well located. It's not yet released yet by National Public Works, but plans are advanced in terms of the release of the property. And we would want to densify it in terms of the development plan that we've prepared. And the intention is to accommodate the victims of the Luanda eviction by Sana. Other opportunities, Madam Chair, we have not forgotten about hotels, especially because the intention is to try and ensure that hotels that are not in government hands, hotels that are not owned by municipalities and provinces are also acquired so that we can improve the living conditions of hostel residents. So these are Transnet hotels that we have considered already, and we're looking at acquiring them so that we can be able to upgrade them into better livable human settlements. And you would see they cut across many areas, Joburg, Pretoria, Northwest, Kimberley, Bloemfontein, Cape Town, PE, and also Durban. The land, this is land that has been on the raid for quite some time, and we still have plans to acquire it, but there's some direction that we'll be getting from the department in terms of how we proceed with that one. I think the issue there is compensation, whether we pay fair value or market value, but Transnet is saying, the land is saying they want market related valuation for the land, all being that we're losing, I think, half of the land due to environmental constraints and also lately with the expansion of the current Cape Town International Airport. The noise contours are also affecting significantly the development potential of the property. SECON, as you probably know, SECON is currently being disestablished, and we're taking over some of the SECON properties located countrywide for human settlements development, especially those that are suitable for development. This is the summary land pipeline for 2015 and 16. In total, we're looking at over 6,404 hectares of land, covering almost all the provinces and also covering all the national custodians, including most of the state-owned companies' land. Now, these are some of the constraints that we currently have, and I think the first one in relation to ad hoc planning for land acquisition and assembly by provinces and municipalities. Now, what we are proposing in line with the earlier presentation is that we come up with a practice note to address and promote forward planning so that municipalities don't wake up or provinces don't wake up on the 15th of March to say we want to acquire this piece of land, but we are saying that there must be multi-year land acquisition programs linked with the master special plan, and also that addresses specifically the medium-term strategic framework targets. And HDA from time to time would have to ensure that we are advised in terms of land planning by provinces and municipalities. And recently we've also established a quarter land forum that meets quarterly with provinces to mainly deal with land planning by provinces and also by municipalities. The next constraint relates to the fact that limited amount of money gets budgeted for land acquisition, and the proposed mitigation measure is that there must be ring-fenced land funding to address the backlog that captured in the first slide, and that the HDA needs to be working very closely with provinces and municipalities to give direction in terms of human settlements land planning, and the fact that HDA has to be capitalized to deal with some of the key strategic land parcels that are required for national priority projects. And the slow delays in terms of approvals by provinces for municipalities, again, we're working very closely with some provinces, not always very helpful, but again, there we're saying that what would help is that there must be a multi-year land acquisition plan or program by municipalities and provinces, and also that the HDA needs to be better capacitated to be able to deal with some of the key land challenges. Now, in relation to national custodians, custodian departments, notably public works, there is the JCC that's established and fully operational, and we raised some of the challenges with them at the forum. Some get resolved, but in the main, we have not yet been able to crack the whip, unfortunately, yet. And we have also proposed continuous regular bilateral meetings with the National Department of Public Works to address land release delays. And in relation to compensation of SOCs that release land for human settlement, there is a compensation framework that has been developed and it's been discussed at the Presidential Coordinating Committee and also at the JCC level in terms of what must be paid for lands that get leased by state-owned companies. As part of my concluding remarks, I'm saying that the ATA was established to assist with the land planning and assembly and already has specialist capacity in place to complement capacity constraints currently within municipalities and provinces. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Jean and Acting CEO. Members will recall that in every meeting that we have been interacting with provinces and some of the municipalities, it has been a standard question we ask how is your relationship with HDA? We've tried to ascertain how they understand how they should be interacting and working with if they will acquire the land. So this presentation sheds some light in many of the things that we've been asking in the past. Well, members, there's the presentation from HDA. Any comments? Yes, Honorable Baker. Yes, Honorable Kana. You see, well, members, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got some questions regarding the proposal for the various provinces. If I look at Gauteng, for example, the Rand Skull property that is mentioned, I would imagine that studies are done and forward planning is done already. So that if we think of the impact on parking in that area, is there some other infrastructure that's planned to accommodate that? Because that's an issue when you go to any event at the SNB Stadium as it is. In case of any particular, I'm particularly concerned with the development around Impangeni, Jarini area, in light of the current water problems that we have, what kind of interdepartmental discussions have taken place to ensure, because that's huge developments that are planned, and that water infrastructure is really strained in that area. What is the future proposal there? Shirley Beach as well, for example, is already an extremely densely populated area. The road system doesn't function very well, especially at fine times of the year. Currently, what is the future plan there for that kind of infrastructure before any development takes place there as well? Okay, I'll study and then to rewind actually there on page 2. That table that's on page 2, the introduction and back of the housing backlog. Are those estimates on based on the 2011 or 2014 figures? Because if I get it, it's based on the 2011 figures and not on the 2014 figures. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Hello, Ms. Mabasa.
Thank you, Chairperson. On your presentation on the public land, you spoke about the Northern Cape, where you are going to be building like units on a mining town. In Kuruman, you spoke about 2,000 units. Is it Kuruman itself or the mining town in around the Kuruman area? And then the land acquisition target, on the progress on land acquisition targets. There are some provinces that are slow in terms of a release of land. What could be the reason behind that? For instance, Northern Cape, Gauteng, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Lord of Kama?
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, when you started this presentation, you did mention that it overlaps from the previous one. And I want to pick on the response that Level 8 area around the land that was to be transferred 1%, and also try to understand the statement that made on this ATA presentation. One, you said when Transnet wants to sell land, let's say the parcel of land or any department, you will get notified that they want to sell that particular parcel of land. But then I think there the process starts. And then when I look at this presentation, on page 3 of the presentation, it says HDA is dependent on provinces and municipalities for land acquisition, which means, in a way, or maybe I'm trying to understand this, because Transnet wants to sell, HDA gets the lease, that particular piece of land that Transnet wants to sell is not in the acquisition plan of that municipality, because it's a separate kind of a thing. And how does the two talk to each other? Because you cannot say, all right, now you enter into a discussion when you do not have the funds to make the acquisition and it's not in line with the provincial or municipal acquisition plan. So how does that whole process get handled? Because I need to get out of the meeting understanding that particular aspect of things. And secondly, and lastly, it's the table that we see here. In terms of the land that is earmarked to be acquired, there's significant amount that in private hands. How far are the negotiations before they get into this acquisition plan? Because I don't want the situation to be told that the municipality just said that there's a piece of land there that belongs to the airport. We think we want to buy, but we don't know how much it is, the negotiations have been happened. I want to check, when you put in a piece of land here, is it a piece of land that money has already been set aside, negotiations have happened, and the price on that particular land has actually been put up, so that we know that these targets can be achieved, so that we don't come back and say, no, the municipality changed the money, because they didn't have money. But if you look at, I think, almost 36 out of 9 provinces, they wouldn't have a USDG budget, unlike your Joburg, your Cape Town, your Pretoria. So they are totally dependent on the USDG, which in a way holds them back in the extent that they can acquire the land. And the massive amount of land parcels seems to be also in those rural provinces, where even the HSDG grant is not as massive compared to our urbanized provinces. So I just want to check how that whole thing is handled. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sabat.
Thank you, Chairperson. On assisting municipalities and provinces and also fast-tracking the process of acquisition of land, how do you deal with that because in most cases municipalities are delayed by underlying properties. That's the major one. The second major one are the rates owed to the municipalities by the, especially the second land, for both challenges, the first one that I've mentioned and the rate one, because if that negotiations are done and the payment, and then the question at the end of the day is the rate base that goes to the municipality. The third one is the parastatal hotels that you want to upgrade. It's the question of deaths occurred over the number of years. Who is going to offset those debts? Because in most cases, the Transnet or whatever parastatal or private sector it is selling to a municipality, it's because the residents are not paying anymore, and the state of those hostels are not, and who is going to offset that? The last one is on the table, on I think it's a pipeline that talks about Western Cape having 350 and then anticipated hectares as 12,000 hectares, and then the KZN having 4,000
the anticipated hectares as 12,000, the numbers are too close therefore to understand the rationale. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kuba.
Chair, thank you very much, and thanks for the presentation. I'm not sure if I'm still on the page 5, slide number, is it 10? Yes, number 10. The National Land Pipeline 2015-2016. The notes, if it can be carried for the others, explains further. The multi-year land planning information is not available currently, giving a cut off planning. The public land, there's so and delay on the response for. And that's one that said, really, if we can plan to clarify the whole Clayton itself, I'll be very essential.
Thank you very much. Honorable Member.
Thank you very much, Chair President. I think my question would be related to what Honorable Farai talked about, because one is noticing the moving towards accepting this land in a normal way. So whereas the government has been clear that we want to move a little bit radical. So I don't, in your reporting here, I don't feel that there's a radical movement. Let's talk about your page 14, where you are joint sitting with the other departments, such as Public Works. So the way you are putting your involvement there is almost by the way. It's not like we are in a mission to really the land that we have always owned, because that's our land, government land, it's the people's land. Now we can't delay accessing that land for the same people that we are representing. So I think radicalization of your action. Maybe HDA must also be assisted by the leaders of the department. If there's a need, I stand here that there may be that, so that we don't delay where the land is there. We may delay where we don't have the land. Radicalization is what is missing. I don't feel it. It's like we operating the normal way, you see. Yabdala. On page 23, you are indicating that slowly housing is becoming a crisis. You know, when you had a backlog that is growing at that level, is beginning to be a problem, which means the eyes of the department and SDA, all entities that have something to do with assisting our people should be looking at housing. So I want to, and because this blog that is indicated there on slide 6, it is quite threatening and is growing at an alarming proportion. And you are also saying in your slide, page 3, that SDA does not have land capital funding to acquire land. To me, then, it emphasize the point of ensuring that the land that the government is having, whether it's in a social housing, you must ensure that we don't lose that land. Nobody must, for whatever reason, want to lose that land and take it elsewhere, where we away from our people. So that's ensure the department must ensure, in particular in housing, with that huge backlog. I think this does necessitate that we must also have our eyes looking at that there's no land, whether it's in social housing, that must go elsewhere. So while we are acquiring land, you must not be selling land. In particular, already busy with housing, whether it's social housing. So that must not happen. It's just a warning, because I happen to be staying in housing. So I just ensuring that that does not happen. But it goes across South Africa. When we need land, we can't be selling land that is strategic for our people.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. maybe before the responses, mine is really not necessarily directed to the HDA, but to the department itself. HDA was put together so that it can assist the provinces and the municipalities to acquire land. Now, the provinces are using only 1% of their HSDC for acquiring of land. What is the department doing? Looking at all this backlog of land, how does the national department interact with provinces in making sure that in terms of the HSDC, they for the higher percentage that they put aside in terms of land acquiring? Because if you are going to just have provinces that are putting 1% of HSDC and you come there and you lament every day that they can't acquire land, what is it that the department is doing when it's sitting in the min-mag with the provinces, in the technical min-mag? How are you mitigating this threat? That's all I want to ask. As the HCA responds and the department responds.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just before Lucian responds, one of the points that we have made to the presentation, Chair, which I think it's a problem statement that will be dealt with quite effectively by a framework that Mr. Chelsea has referred to, is the fact that land acquisition strategies is a concurrent function which requires some form of a very effective integrated approach in dealing with multi-year plans for land acquisition. The absence of acquiring land for human settlement development will reflect negatively in dealing with housing backlog. And the framework will have to deal how to make sure that what this is a concurrent function, but how to effectively provide this service effectively. That is one of the challenges that the framework will have to deal with, and some agreements are reached on how to deal with this. As it stands, it's a very ad hoc manner in which this is done at the moment, and it has a negative impact in terms of planning. From an integrated planning point of view, one of the key things that has been raised, for example, was how do we make sure, for example, that for a project that is taking place in Jersey, different departments are playing a major role. That will require some interspheric arrangements in terms of different pieces of government playing a role to make sure that happens. And we've seen that the Konubia project, how interdepartmental and IT are functioning, become critical in projects of this nature. And part of the framework will have to deal with this element quite effectively. Other problem statement, Chair, and we have also made reference to it yourself, is the fact that SDA does not have capital funding to acquire land, and yet in terms of its mandate legislatively, it's expected to play a very important role in coordinating of this. Our view as we review our mandate at SDA at the moment is to try and find ways and means of making sure that this aspect is dealt with, and we are also trying to consult with Treasury, and we'll also be consulting with yourself and come with your proposals how to deal with this challenge. It becomes very difficult for SDA to play a very meaningful role and strategic role for the acquiring of land in terms of its mandate in the absence of capital funding, and strictly dependent on the grants that are given into other spheres of government, in particular municipalities as well as the provincial department. But most importantly also is the fact that it's not true, but most strategic land for human settlement development is in the private sector environment. And that requires a much more capital intensive funding that would assist HDA to play its meaningful mandate in a much more effective way. So our approach in trying to have capital funding will also unlock the potential, and would like the framework to deal with aspects as well. Because that will unlock the potential for human settlement development, and also to make sure that we put strategies in place to access strategic private land for human settlement purposes. And this should be done in collaboration with other spheres of government. But HDA is not currently positioned to leverage any form of such arrangement in the absence of capital funding. That becomes one of the problem statements that we are dealing with. And that talks into integrated development strategies that we want to do for different projects. And when we speak about Catholic projects, this becomes even much more clearer for us to deal with. So these are the things, Chair, as you've indicated, that the framework will have to deal with. This is a concurrent function, but the planning is not properly integrated at the moment, and the funding mainstreams are also a challenge for SDA to play the exercise. In other words, say we are more of a better for land development than the leverage which we should be doing in terms of our mandate. And we need to begin to review that particular model as we engage with different tiers of government, in particular the provinces and the municipalities. And this challenge, as you have seen in the presentation, has been also been clarified by the fact that different provinces are not paying special attention into putting some money aside for human domestic development in terms of land acquisition. And the 1%, we may not see the effects of it. The 1% budgeting that we have seen as outlined in our presentation could have a negative impact in the future if it's not dealt with effectively at this point in time. And that's why we're trying to bring our colleagues closer to us, those different agreements, to make sure that we pay a special attention on that particular challenge. But that's why we let me raise those issues before we can get into specific areas that have been raised by honorable members. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Chair. I think just to be specific in terms of the specific questions, if I may start with the first one. In Gauteng, the Nazareth land, I indicated that is public works land, and what has happened there specifically, Honorable Chair, is the fact that the Minister received many competing interests, public interests for the very same land, from ranging from the provincial Department of Economic Development, wanting to do a smart city, Department of Arts and Culture wanting to establish a heritage monument on the land, the city of Joburg wanting to do a disaster management, wanting to develop a disaster management center in the area. So what then happened is the minister called all of us and asked us to come up with a harmonized integrated development plan championed by the Housing Development Agency. We did exactly that. We looked at all the competing interests and we tried to accommodate all of them in the final development plan, which we have since submitted to the minister. So there would still be disaster management center in the area, there would still be smart city concept developed on the same land and also housing. We've also taken into account the fact that there would be parking requirements or parking requirements in the area as and when there are measures for activities. KZN and Bangeni, that's a property that has already been acquired. There's been bulk infrastructure assessment and costing done on the property. So we know exactly how much it's going to cost to bring in bulk water and sewer in the area. And because it's a catalytic project, the province, including the municipality in Klatuzi, has been speaking to the district as well to assist in terms of ensuring that there's bulk funding budgeted for that development because of its scale. I must indicate that it's already in an approved township, so all we need to do there is to redesign the township layout plan so that we maximize in terms of the number of housing opportunities. Josini, we are aware that there are water challenges. I must indicate that it's also an approved township, but the municipality is working on that. Shelly Beach, this is also an approved township, but it wasn't approved for low-income housing or integrated human settlement development. So what we are doing again there is to try and redesign the approved township layout plan such that we can also accommodate low-income housing. And we have spoken to Ugu District Municipality. We have a fair idea of what the bulk requirements would be in the same area. As I indicated, it's an approved township. I think we will take care of, as we redesign the township layout, and we will take care of the future road access issues as well in the area. The figures represents that plot number 4. There's the 2011 figures, and there's also the 2014 figures in the table. In the Northern Cape, Kuruman, the specific public land that we've identified in the area is meant to address the mining challenges in the Gurman area. And the provincial delays that we are making reference to specifically is the fact that there are instances where you find that a municipality wants to acquire a certain piece of land, but then towards the end of the financial year, there's no longer budget for land acquisitions, but money goes into the production of housing units. We are not necessarily saying that is bad, but we are saying that can be improved. And in relation to Transnet land, all we are saying here is that Transnet would from time to time avail their non-core properties to HDA. And what the FDA would normally do as soon as you receive the list would be to assess all the properties and then harvest what is useful for human settlements, isolate them, and then negotiate with provinces and municipalities in terms of funding for the acquisition of those specific Transnet land parcels, specifically Transnet. The private land pipeline that is mentioned in the presentation, these are properties that are at advanced stages. It's not just the identified list. You would have seen from the presentation that there's a bigger number for identified land, but not a bigger number for the land pipeline. So these are land parcels where we, for instance, done valuations, feasibility studies, there's an indicative budget, and the business plans of the respective provinces accommodate the specific land parcels in their business plans. Debt owed to municipalities, that is indeed a problem. In fact, in Houghton and Lakhlahostong, we find that residents or the Transnet and Transnet also or the city of Joburg exorbitant amounts of money for electricity rates and taxes and the like. In some instances, we are able to get Transnet to write off the debt, and we are equally able in certain instances within the bounds of the law to get municipalities to also write off the present taxes owed on the specific hostels, because the nature of hostels are such that in reality these are toxic others in terms of the way they are, how they are functioning, and generally liabilities towards municipalities. The KwaZulu-Natal housing backlog and the Western Cape housing backlog must indicate they are more or less the same, but not exactly the same. And I think that that's because, I mean, you have your city of Etekwini in KZN, which has more or less the same challenges as what you have in Western Cape. So the backlog is more or less the same in the two municipalities, or the two metros. The site 10 challenges, I think all we're saying there, Honorable Chair, is the fact that custodian departments sometimes are not necessarily releasing land at the pace at which we are expecting. As I indicated, that applies mainly to your National Department of Public Works. It's a big concern for us. We are engaging the department from time to time. We hope that that will improve over time. But in instances where they are able to even move faster, there are also other interdependencies. For instance, before a specific land asset or land parcel can finally be released, Treasury also must sanction the release in terms of PSMA. You will find that Public Works takes maybe 6 months to release a piece of land, but Treasury still also takes 4 months to sanction or to approve the release of a specific land parcel. So we don't only chase Public Works, for instance, but we chase Public Works and we also chase National Treasury as well to ensure that the release of land for human settlements is not delayed either. Other acquisition methods, we are mindful of the fact that we need to re-expropriate land. Luckily, in most instances, I must indicate, especially on land transactions where it's done valuations and also negotiations, there have been instances where, I think, if I may cite some examples, the Middleburg properties, the municipality in Mpumalanga, you have the 557 properties, hectare property that's required for informal settlements upgrading. The landowner there, I think, wanted some 60 million for that property. We negotiated, I think, over 2 days, and our valuations were way below that. I think we had valuations ranging from 8 million to about 49 million. And at the end of the day, we ended up buying that property at 30 million. So in instances where we are not able to agree on a price with the landowner, we do mention at the end of the negotiations that we reserve our right to acquire in terms of the expropriation route. So whenever in most instances you mention the expropriation route, the next email you get is from a landowner saying, I'll accept your price. But it doesn't necessarily mean that we don't recognize the fact that we have that thing. I'm sure that going forward we will be expropriating some land. We will, in other ways, on the problems, become radical in our approach. Houghton, we are mindful of the fact that Houghton has particular challenges in terms of their land pipeline, project pipeline, and therefore that affects delivery of human settlements in the province. And we are also mindful of the resources that are allocated to housing, both in terms of the three metros and the province for human settlements development body. We have been talking to them fairly recently, and we will be coming up with specific special interventions to deal with land matters, land assembly matters in Gauteng. Hopefully that will then improve their project pipeline and then for delivery. But we are already in that space. We will be focusing on Gauteng. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So just an indication, I mean, in relation to the overall process, land identification process in the entire delivery chain, is the department through its funding, through HSCGs, which is its principle, the foundational basis of what we do, particularly in relation to land planning, is what is contained in IDPs. With the municipal IDPs, it goes into the provincial plans, and then that comes into to what is the human settlement development plan. So, and through the HDA, and one of the reasons for the HDA was the HDA to assist particularly the provinces as well as the municipalities to develop human settlements, land identification and acquisition plans. That's the ideal. And because of the issue, and I think Lucian and the acting CEO raised it, is the issue around concurrency and also niceness on the part of us to say, well, we set up the HDA, and the expectation is that the HDA will become the custodian for all human settlements, land acquisition, identification, where state funding is utilized. And that's the ideal. Now the issue is, and I think one of the points it has been, is that there's been a reluctance. There's been a reluctance by provinces and municipalities to utilize the services of the HDA. And I think what the department is now doing through this practice note is to be able to say, well, we will now force you to do this because we want some kind of accountability, we want some kind of responsibility and uniformity. And the issue that we've taken up is the issue around, and I think points to you, is that what we want to be able to ideally and ensure is that we have a ring-fenced amount for land acquisition for human settlements in the country. Managed by the HDA, in consultation with provinces and municipalities, and we can get better value, we can get better economies of scale, and perhaps the radicalism that we need in relation to what we need to have to. So that's the ideal. And I think as part of the process and as a practice and the framework that we're wanting to achieve, we will through this grant framework, the USDG, the HSDG, the practice of be drawing on the support and the guidance of this committee to be able to get us to that situation. It says, well, there's obviously a deficiency and a issues that need to be dealt with, particularly in relation to improving land acquisition planning so that we can meet the targets that we're speaking about. Chair, I hope that deals with some of that.
Just to add, Chair, I think it's the practice note and the framework that we're talking about, it's in the short term. If you look at the bigger picture for the long term, we are looking at the current legislation that is there with the Housing Development Agency. If you look at the provisions which are in terms of Section 5.3 and Section 5.4, I think it's those two sections which are creating the enabling environment that we are sitting in. We've looked at it with an intention to say, even the long term, that's what we should be able to talk about and be able to fix. Because if you look specifically what it provides for, it's saying basically, if I can read from the act, the minister may, in consultation with the relevant MEC, where there is a lack of capacity in any organ of the state, to identify, acquire, hold, and develop and release land for residential and community purposes, advise the organ of state to conclude an agreement. It's on the basis of those agreements which, to a certain extent, they are not being honored, as we are coming with the practice note. But also, again, in terms of Section 5.4, which provides the fact that it's saying nothing in the act detracts from the power of the province and the municipality to identify, acquire, hold, develop and release the land for residential purposes. That in itself, it locks us in a particular situation because we are sort of having a legislation that is basically allowing provinces to be able to develop their own plans. So when we come with the process note, it's basically trying to resolve that and enforcing it so that it becomes law. But in the long term, our intention is just to try and deal with those two clauses. Maybe the initial stages when this legislation was put in place, there was a reason, or maybe it was put as a risk abatement mechanism to say, in the event that the HDA doesn't have the necessary capacity, it should be able to help, provinces should be able to help. But with the 5-year period that we've been through implementing, I think the practice and the problem statement that we are dealing with is telling us a different picture. What we are saying, those are the areas that we need to look at. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Which means, therefore, when this framework or the practice notes, whatever you want to call it, when they come back before this committee, it should therefore have a reference on the long-term position. It should also say something about the ring fence. It must not say ring fence. It must be able to tell us probably the proposals, the quotas, the percentage. But we don't just leave it open. But then when we're discussing something that is concrete, obviously we're looking forward to when you come back with both structures or the framework, but we will engage further as the committee. But I do thank you very much for these two presentations. They shed light on what we've been grappling with as the committee. And we really want to appreciate your time and the experience that you've given. We still have a third presentation that we must get, which is the last presentation on the NAS. Which is going to be done by, from what I understand, Mr. Vallis and Neville. It also speaks to the two presentations that we've had, because NAS is about informal settlement upgrade, so it still speaks to the left. So can we then get this presentation, and then, so that we... Do you want to come to take off 5 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Do you?
Yes.
Okay, 5 minutes. Come back, please.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I'm worried about the fact that you wanted to leave and lunch arrived when the time of lunch arrives and we had a sitting with them. So, okay, can I cut therefore? If you are saying the numbers are today. Because I see Honorable Kaka, Honorable Papa, Honorable Horai. So if by sitting you mean you're representing one of them sitting, we understand that. You ready? Okay. I think we can start when you are ready.
Thank you, Professor. In relation to the National Upgrading Support Program, there's three sectors documents that were circulated. The one is the overall picture. The second one, which is the one that Mr. Wallace is going to present, is giving an update on the progress of what we've done, particularly in relation to the specifics. And then the third one, which was requested to be circulated, was the one which just gives an overall picture of an example of what we're doing in a particular, in that case it was the Mossel Bay, but there's specific ones, for example, that are the Rustenburg Amarkana project. But Mr. Wallace will give the presentation, particularly in relation to the update. Yeah.
Chair, thank you very much, and good morning to the House. Madam Chair, just to confirm, what are the NAFO objectives again? That is really to promote incremental informal settlement upgrading in terms of the housing code. The informal settlement upgrading program, as you're aware, was produced in October 2004, and NAF really tries to promote in situ informal settlement upgrading as opposed to relocating people in cases where it's not suitable. Our target in terms of the MTSF, as far as informal settlement upgrading is concerned, is to provide level 2 or basic services to 750,000 informally settled households. Now, the NAS program is in support of that. The NAS is not a capital program. It does not fund capital development. It is a technical support program in order to build the pipeline of projects that will then be funded in terms of the USDG, the HSDG, and so on. And in certain cases also being provided with funding from MIG as it's managed from COCTA, etc. So our aim is to promote a programmatic approach to upgrading and then also to strengthen coordination with the three spheres of government, other partners, etc. One of the important or very important functions, Madam Chair, is to build capacity in the sector. As you may be aware, in terms of informal settlement upgrading per se, the provinces and municipalities are way behind performing on the target that was set for them. And if we do not strengthen the capacity of municipal officials and in a number of cases also provincial officials, they will not be able to actually implement informal settlement upgrading. And as I said, the NASP really creates a pipeline of projects or plans that should then be reflected over time in your provincial business plans. Madam Chair, initially, as you're aware, our focus was on 45 municipalities which were identified in terms of some 70% of all households who reside in informal settlements were present in those 45 municipalities. We have since increased our target to focus on initial 62 municipalities. That includes the mining towns, and as you may be aware, the HDA is probably our main partner as far as our mining town development is concerned, and they are also now fulfilling the function of NASP as part of the overall coordination function in the mining town. And another 20 million rand has also been allocated to the HDA for NASP specifically in the mining towns that they are operating in. Just to give you an idea of what our broad activities are and that we perform in terms of the NAS program. In the first instance, in many of the 62 municipalities, we assist them to repair municipal-wide informal settlement upgrading strategies or programs. These strategies then start impacting on the IDPs, and we encourage the municipalities to take the work that we do forward into the IDPs. The IDPs in turn would then impact, as Neville indicated earlier, would then impact again on the proposals that they would submit to a provincial administration, provincial government, in order to get their plans into the provincial business plans. The second function that we fulfill, Madam Chair, is to assess the informal settlements. I will come back to this item when we show you the slideshow of the Marshall Bay project to explain what these four categories are that we categorize informal settlements into and why we do it in that manner. We then assist municipalities to develop settlement level plans for each and every informal settlement. Now that is the plan and the pipeline that we are talking about going forward and getting it onto a capital program. One of our requirements nowadays is that for each and every settlement plan that is developed, there must be a livelihood strategy for that particular informal settlement and for that community, done in collaboration with a specific community to say what will happen in terms of and how will we manage a livelihood strategy in these settlements. We also require in a majority of cases that our service providers develop a municipal capacity building program in terms of the officials, but to a very large extent the community members, to enable them to partake in the activities of the development of plans of their specific settlement. We also require the service providers to do a skills transfer to the staff of the municipality. Lastly, Madam Chair, we have also developed a very, very comprehensive capacity building program, which will consist of a 13-module program done over a period of 12 days for municipal officials, by and large. We have piloted this program with Ekurhuleni, some 16 officials in Ekurhuleni with very, very positive results, so much so that the content of this program has now been finalized. And in fact, the Deputy Minister will be handing over certificates to the officials who attended this course by the end of this month in Ekurhuleni. Now the next slide, please. No? Just to confirm, in relation to NASP specifically, our MTSF targets are to assess and to categorize 2,200 informal settlements across South Africa, keeping in mind that for now we are only focusing on the 62 municipalities where we will have to move into other municipalities with quite soon. The second target in relation to the NUS program specifically is to develop 2,200 settlement upgrading plans. Madam Chair, we will have to scale this target down. And the reason for that is that when we developed these targets, we thought we would, for each and every settlement, develop a plan. In a number of cases, we categorize our settlements as a Category C settlement, which means that all settlements need to be relocated to a different area because of a number of reasons or a combination of a number of reasons, such as an area being prone to flooding, it being shallowly undermined, dolomite, whatever the case may be. Those resettlement cases or relocation cases are being dealt with in terms of the IRDP program more often than not. So from a NAS point of view, we will not be developing the plans for those relocation areas, but we will focus our activities on the in-situ upgrades and to develop plans for those settlements where either full-scale or partial in-situ upgrading will be happening. And then the last target that we have for the NTSF period is to implement that 12-13-day capacity building program that I referred to in some 10 municipalities per annum. Progress, Madam Chair, as I indicated, our course material has been piloted, the program has been signed off, and we need to implement that now. In terms of our assessment and categorization, the current slide indicates that we have completed 791 assessments. That was the figure when we produced this presentation some 2 weeks ago. We have now received additional information, Madam Chair. Our actual figure as of last Friday, in fact, now stands at 934. So we have assessed and categorized 934 informal settlements against a target of 2,200. Was it about 16 months into the MTSS period? So on that one, we're doing quite well, I believe. Also keeping in mind that we're still only just focusing on the 62 municipalities and not all 278 municipalities in the country. But actually, we have also completed 31 informal settlement strategies for municipalities, and we have 14 currently in progress, although that one is not a specific MTSF target. We believe that one of the most important functions of NUS to assist municipalities to have a municipal-wide informal settlement program and a strategy which will be able to guide the municipality for the next 5, 8, 10 years on how to approach the informal settlement problem. Just one back, please, Emma. The last one, Madam Chair, we have completed 240 informal settlement upgrading plans. In other words, we have plans for 240 settlements, and there are another 322 plans currently in progress, which will be completed at the latest by the end of this current financial year, keeping in mind that we are constantly moving our targets and our municipalities, signing new service level agreements to include additional settlements under that specific target. Thanks, Memo. We have produced an upgrading manual for practitioners, Madam Chair. That is available on our website. We created a specific website for the NUS program. Currently, in view of our own capacity constraints, the HTA is assisting us in managing and running that particular website. But there's very useful information on that. We are also producing a monthly newsletter which is being sent out on the work that NUSP is being done, that NUSP is performing. And then lastly, we are currently also doing an investigation on possible tenure options on tribal land, particularly in the KZN area, but not exclusively. There are a number of informal settlements found on tribal land. It is always a problem of providing an amount of tenure security, and we are investigating a number of possibilities which might improve or should or could improve tenure security for people. In terms of our budget, that's all, Madam Chair. Our budget for this year is 72.11 million for NUSP. Thus far, we have secured 11 million through signed agreements. There's another 31 million of requests for quotations in the pipeline. Our bid adjudication committee sat last week. Six tenders were dealt with there, and the majority of the 31 million that I refer to there should be tied up, signed and sealed within the next 2 or 3 weeks. The technical support program that I refer to there is to buy in additional technical support for the department to actually manage this program more effectively and efficiently. Currently, our directorate informal settlement upgrading consists of two people, and those two people are by and large trying to manage this program. There are, for instance, 29 contracts running. Each and every one of these contracts have meetings that take place on a monthly basis with municipalities, and those two people are trying to manage and attend each of these program steering committee meetings. So we have suggested and agreed on a process to buy in additional support for the department to implement the program, and we estimate the cost of that for the balance of this year will be in the region of 10 million rand. And then to implement the capacity building program that I referred to, which was piloted in Ekurhuleni, an amount of 5 million was budgeted for that. So up to now, Madam Chair, we have or are in the process of tying up some 57 million of the budget of, say, 72 million in relation to the last program. The challenges that we still experiencing, Madam Chair, that is to reinforce the concept of incremental upgrading. In many instances with provinces, in many instances with municipalities. Informal settlement upgrading is a lengthy process. It takes time. It takes time to sit with communities for them to be capacitated in many instances, to plan with them, not for them. The incremental process is by its very nature a fairly slow process, particularly when you upgrade in situ and don't use the bulldozer method by pushing in a bulldozer and just building new houses. And you need to find a balance between chasing for numbers, housing units, and promoting the concept of in situ informal settlement. You can do a normal housing project in a greenfield situation in a matter of 2.5 or 3 years. The same number of units in an informal settlement would probably take you up to 6 years or more. But we believe that the benefits of keeping that community cohesion in an in situ upgrading situation by far exceeds what I refer to as the bulldozer method, bulldozing shacks, building new houses, and moving out onto the next development. As I indicated, we need to increase our own MUSP management and implementation capacity. We are in dire need of additional assistance just to efficiently and effectively manage this program from the department side. I think we have found the solution. It's now just a matter of implementing it. I've already referred to building municipal capacity and knowledge. That program will now be rolled out. One of our biggest challenges is to convince municipalities to partake in community-led planning, where communities actually start indicating, these are our requirements, these would be our wishes. How do we build this into an informal settlement plan? And we're trying to confirm those approaches with municipalities, but it remains one of our biggest challenges. And then lastly, Madam Chair, probably the biggest challenge, given the fact that we have completed more than 300 plans, we are in the process of producing quite a number more, is to get those plans back into the pipeline, to let them appear on the provincial business plans and have them confirmed for funding. Initially, we established established the virtual NASP fora, that where the province would take the lead with our various NASP municipalities in order to establish a coordination mechanism. In certain provinces, it is working very, very well. In other provinces, there is a total lack of commitment and participation in terms of the NAS program. So as part of increasing our NAS management capacity, referred to under Bullet 2, we also want to bring in particular program or project managers who will not only assist us in managing the development of informal settlement plans, but who will also take charge of promoting those plans with provinces and the funding of those plans with provinces in order for those projects to be physically funded as capital projects. Yeah. Ramchay, that would conclude this part indicating the progress of the on the NAS. Attached to that, I have provided you with a list of the 62 municipalities in which we are currently operational. Those 62, you will notice in your slides, also include the mining towns, which have been marked with an asterisk. But the department thought, Madam, where are we now, Noel? Top one. The department thought that in order to give you a picture of the type of work that NAP is in fact performing, particularly in relation to the categorization of informal settlements, the development of a settlement level plan, and then also the development of a municipal-wide strategy, we would like to take you very, very quickly through a slideshow which would hopefully give you a bird's eye view of the type of work that we do in the different municipalities and each individual informal settlement. Keeping in mind that the presentation that we are going to do is only an extract from a much, much larger presentation, and hopefully this will just give you an idea of the work that we are currently doing. Just to give you the project purpose, so on some of these slides I'm really just going to fly through them. Just give you the activities. What we would do is we would get all the informal settlements, do a very quick socio-economic investigation, as in the case of this one that is now, we would have the number of households in those informal settlements. Thank you. That's our methodology that we, by and large, would follow in terms of our activities. We would then go into a data collection process, from a desktop study, municipal consultations, do a survey of the settlement, and then also consultations with the various communities in the different settlements. Our settlement surveying would consist of all those elements to look at what there is, what isn't there, what should there be, etc., etc. That's part of our community consultations, how we would, the type of issues that we would discuss with them. Thanks, Neil. Madam Chair, that is, unfortunately, the screen is a little bit small, but in order to do a rapid assessment, you require particular basic information, and that is the type of sheet that we use to assess a settlement, to find out what it looks like, and then to actually categorize such a settlement, taking into account the elements as you see there on the slideshow. Those are the categories that I referred to earlier on, in terms of which we categorize the informal settlements. Category A, full in-situ upgrading, which can be done immediately. How should we do a full service, a stop structure, etc., etc.? And then we would move down to, for instance, a Category C settlement, which the site is, on which the site is not viable for long-term upgrading, and relocation would be required in relation to such a community. We would then categorize the various settlements in terms of that previous slide that I show you. You will notice this one that, please know, you will have in certain settlements, you would have a combination of, for instance, a B1 and a C, or only a C, or whatever the case may be. That part of your settlement would have to be relocated due to particular constraints, whether it's density constraints or land constraints. This is typically moving into an example of an upgrading plan, where we then provide what would are the required immediate interventions in that particular community, and intermediate interventions in that particular, we're referring there to the Valville Extension 1 and 2 informal settlement. We would then start developing a proposed upgrading plan for a particular settlement. We would provide some housing examples to a municipality which it can consider to be implemented in a settlement. That really gives you a bird's eye view of the type of work that we do as far as the informal settlement plan is concerned. The next slide then moves into an example of a municipal-wide program or a strategy. The type of work that we do there, what is the context of Mottle Bay, what would be an informal settlement response plan, what are the core issues that need to be addressed as a municipal-wide approach. What would be the main responses in terms of services, tenure, housing, development of a detailed settlement response plan for the informal settlements, what would be the land requirements, etc., etc. So I don't want to read each and every slide to you, Madam Chair, but I think in your own time you can look at these, and hopefully that will give you an idea of the type of results that we are getting. Then last year, just one back there. One back. We would then eventually end up with a table assisting a local authority of an estimated cost, relocation cost, so estimated cost of for instance, an in-situ upgrading in your B1 settlement. What would be a typical relocation cost where people have to be relocated, and the number of households to be relocated. That would all form part of the municipal-wide strategy, and all the informal settlement information would then be put together in order to also assist a municipality to start budgeting for these issues. Thank you. Just one back, yeah. So that just gives you an eye, hopefully, Madam Chair, as I said, a bird's eye view of the type of work that NAP is doing. I need to stress that this type of work is not a one-week or a two-week exercise. In Mossel Bay, for instance, the first part of the contract was a seven-month contract where we addressed, if I remember correctly, 12 informal settlements. We have just initiated phase two with Mossel Bay, for instance, where we will sign a new service-level agreement and address a number more, an additional 15, if I remember correctly, an additional 15 informal settlements, and also producing plans for those. Madam Chair, that would then conclude my presentation in terms of the NAS program. I have brought along a number of CDs for members that we have also developed and that we use in our meetings with provinces, municipalities and communities to give them an idea of what informal settlement upgrading is all about. So DC gives an overview of what, how to approach project planning, what is a rapid assessment categorization, and how we would like to conduct community engagement as part of our overall planning process. You're very welcome to these CDs. The members want to look at these in their own time. You're welcome to those. Madam Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. So that's the presentation on the National Upgrade and Support Program, otherwise known as SAP, as NAP. Comments and questions? Honorable Selembe, I didn't see that you are here. Honorable Selembe, Honorable Nganga Tsabase, Honorable Ghana, Honorable Bata.
Thank you, Chairperson Gabon Rakur. My question will relate to the allocation of 5 million rand for capacity building. How do you monitor that the money that you are investing in building capacity to the staff in municipalities is not wasted by having those people leaving the job for other jobs? Because it's not the first time, if you look at the human segment or housing, that number of people were capacitated, but we are not able to measure the output of that investment, that people been capacitated, but can we see the difference after giving that capacity building in municipalities? That is, and my colleagues, I can see that's a big investment. And also, it is noticeable, we are going for local government elections next year. You are doing, giving that investment to capacitate the staff. How do you monitor that the change of power in municipalities does not end up changing the people who have been capacitated and deployed to other duties because of trying to put some people on the same job where you have invested? Because we have noticed that once they've been capacitated, the new leadership would say, okay, I'm not happy with that person, but you have invested in that particular individual. That is, how do you want to ensure that your good initiative is not, I mean, undermined by the new leadership, say, like the local government coming next year? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Selembe. Honorable Khan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think as politicians and as the local department, we've been saying that as you have said, that the institute upgrade where people live is the way to go, where it's practically possible, and we still support that development. But when the settlement is densely populated, I did not get you clearly. So how do you assist municipalities to relocate those people? I hear you talking about the relocation and something like relocation cost. But how do you assist them in terms of linking up with the land people in terms of relocating those people not very far from, because they are settled there because they want to be close to the employment opportunities. The second one, Chairperson, other than dealing with the, in most cases, the problematic areas of encroachment and social issues when you upgrade, how do you deal with the land issue? I'm going back to the issue I raised now that was not answered on the underlying properties when you deal with the ownership of that particular land that you are upgrading. On your incremental upgrade, are you only dealing with those that you are upgrading now, or you have a plan to go back to those one-room RDP houses in those informal settlements that have been already to upgrade, that have been completed, and even the current one, are you considering walk-ups and high-rise in terms of the institute upgrade? And on the tribal land, the last one share on the tribal land, you talk about the 10-year security. Yes, it's understandable, but I would think we can still upgrade those informal settlements through the PTO, those permission to occupy, until such time that we're able to resolve the 10-year, because they are the authority that can give you the permission to occupy a certificate until such time that we resolve the security 10-year. With the budget, it's very difficult to interrogate the budget, because we don't have it on our distributed slides. It was only up there, but I would have say that we are now on the second quarter of the national department and provincial, and then although it's the first quarter for the municipalities, but with the 700 and something allocated, are we 72.11 allocated? Are we really on the right track in terms of spending? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I want to follow on that Honorable Gawash has ended on around the preparation for the meeting itself. I think it's one thing to concentrate in the presentation, and quite another when you come prepared for that particular presentation. And unfortunately, the presentation that you have given was not speculated. The presentation that was speculated is completely different from the one that you presented today. Maybe there might have been some discussion, or I don't know what it is, but I guess that's something that we need to deal with. But on the budget itself, and I mean 72 million to deal with I think it's still something around 60 or 81 municipalities. For me, it does sound a bit too small, considering how much money we spend to upgrade one informal settlement in the metro. I'm not sure how the informal settlement in the rural provinces, whether they're treated differently from the informal settlement in the metropolitan area. Because the amount of money that are being spent in rural provinces, which NAS is in the main operating in, because the metros will be your USDG funding, it's quite small, and maybe that's why progress is not much. And the question is, this goes to the department, whether there are plans or means to make sure that the informal settlements, regardless of where they might find themselves, they are treated in the same way. And the budget allocated to those informal settlements is the same. Because now, an informal settlement in Limpopo will receive, if I look at that slide that I don't have in my presentation, will receive, say, 500,000. But then, I just give an example. An informal settlement in Cape Town, Johannesburg, or Pretoria, the budget for that one informal settlement goes over 15 or maybe to some extent 30 million then. How do we then justify this particular approach, and whether there's going to be a different approach going forward in how we treat informal settlement upgrades across the country, not discriminate on the basis that this one finds itself in Limpopo, where some of us originate from, you know, we are just here in Western Cape and Joburg because of work, but we from the rural provinces. And we just personally, I feel that there's a bit of discrimination that's being applied to the upgrade of informal settlement in rural provinces compared to those ones in urban centers. So it means I can get something there. And just finally, if possibly we can get those lies that you presented, and then we can try to put together with the ones that were circulated. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Honorable Kata.
The table is put more to. Yes. Okay. Thank you, Chair, for the presentation. And I think this is a very important presentation because we believe that we cannot be providing the house to every citizen in the country, but I think what is important to me is to upgrade to the places where people stay, which, and I'm glad because the presentation talks to what exactly you as this portfolio want to be achieving of upgrading 750,000 informal settlement. But my question, just briefly, is around what process do you follow when you decide? I'm looking at the municipalities that at the moment you are focusing on. What process do you follow to decide which municipality to check perhaps those informal settlements that are upgradable and those not upgradable? I'm just interested, and I think member Sabasha also raised something similar to that. It's very important. And also my experience with regards to upgrade of informal settlement, most of the time is spent on the community engagement. I just want to check so far so that, I mean, if you see that there is a progress, what is it, I mean, that you guys are doing to make sure that you quickly manage that community engagement, because that is where sometimes the delay comes from. But other than that, my interest is on how to choose. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If we can get a sponsor, we can start the language. We still be with the imagination start.
Madam Chair, Neville indicated to me that he wanted to just give a broader response first before we get to the detail. Can I just check with it? Do you want to start off?
Sorry, Chair. Just an apology. Apologies to yourself and the committee together with the ministry. There was a glitch in relation to the circulation because the systems in relation to that, just checked with but apologies. The presentation that Johan made, the summary, to form the basis of the previous presentation submitted, which is before the committee, which presents a more sort of detailed indication. So I have to apologize for that aspect. Chair,
before you pass on, the summarized one, when is the disconnect effectuated?
So I just checked with
okay.
Because it was sent through, but there's been a major glitch with our mail system.
Okay.
It's been intermittently off and on for number particularly on that. So I must apologize not only to the committee but also to the ministry as well. Must I tag on? Chair, in relation to just some of the points, in relation to individual upgrading, I think the point that we need to indicate is that the National Upgrading Support Program, what is presented here, does not represent the capital cost. So there's a capital cost attached over and above this. And I don't want us, particularly as members of the committee, to imply that only 72 million rand is being spent on informal settlement upgrading. The figure is, I think it's 25, the last, but I can give an exact figure that for each of the informal settlements that we identified in the provinces, there's amounts allocated for provision of water, provision of sanitation, land acquisition, or something. The issue is that what this does is to supplement and root the concept of in-situ informal settlement upgrading, because what had happened is that particularly within provinces and municipalities, the easy response has been to go for greenfield, construction of a house on a greenfield piece of property, rather than emphasizing the informal settlement upgrading. And that's been a principle that's been adopted and rooted within current mandate of government. So that's the important point to this. So this represents a capacity, a technical support response for municipalities and provinces to be able to do that. In relation to that, as indicated, there's a categorization. So in many respects, when one approaches or when one looks at an informal settlement, when a community settles, one, there's an assessment done. So there's a technical assessment that's undertaken that looks at, particularly in the first instance, the suitability of the land. In many respects, what would happen is that if they shallowly undermine, for example, then if the land is not suitable, it would then require for the entire settlement to be relocated. And when that categorization, so as Juan's indicated in there, there's a category C, which means that the land is not suitable, and it's not environmentally, it's not technically, or it's not health, or poses dangers to community's life, then the entire settlement has to be. When that occurs, then obviously alternative land has to be identified, and the necessary arrangements for relocation. In the identification of that alternative piece of land, what does happen is that one takes into consideration a whole range of factors. That if you're going to move the community, one must not dislocate or destroy the social fabric. One has to keep the cohesiveness, the sustainable program in relation to that. That's the one consideration. In certain instances, you get a portion of the land which the community settled on. Part of it might be developable, part of it might not be developable, and then there's alternatives that need to be sourced. Densities might be too high in particular instances. As a last measure, when a settlement or when the land is found to be suitable for development, and if the density is too high, as a measure of last resort, there's a relocation or partial relocation that takes place. And in that instance, again, it's a question of identifying suitable land, but then also consulting with the community on how and who and by agreement who will relocate. Part of the process, and members of the community will know that, for example, in Joshua informal settlement on the N2 gateway, one of the things that was piloted there was the improving the density. So in any respects, going up or going up, increasing density through medium density. But of course, what needs to happen is that has to be a participative and a process by agreement. And obviously that can take some time. So there's instances, at the moment there's a couple of instances and we're doing a couple in Gauteng, KZN, where we're looking at alternatives but higher density. So that's the density the issue. In relation to, for example, and I'm just going to cover other aspects in relation to some of the points raised by members, when a community is settled, one then does what is called a layout plan, and one takes, and then one would find the encroachment. So in relation to that, it would mean a fact, and I think that's the point that Juan raised. It's an intensive process of community engagement, patience, understanding, and getting agreement of communities around that. The one aspect, particularly around informal settlement upgrading, and particularly in situ, is that private landowners have taken advantage of the aspect. So we're all aware of the concept of shack farming, where landowners will encourage people to occupy land and then force government or the state or province or municipality then to, by then to court or have court applications that they must be upgrading. We've had instances where we've been forced to buy land. A very good example of this was the infamous Motorclip case post the Bradell, where government was then forced to actually lease the land pending relocation. So that's an instance. So around encroachment, around those issues, there's those issues that need to occur.
In relation to land tenure and security of tenure, yes, there are instances, particularly in the KZN area and where there's communal land and it's been owned within communal land trust, the permission to occupy certificates are issued. However, one of the things that we've indicated and a mandate that's been is that that doesn't give tenure, so in relation to the ability of households to leverage the house or the asset for building up of capital has been an issue. But we do use permissions to occupy as a form of tenure. It is utilized. However, what we're looking at is how do we improve the individual household ability to leverage on some of those issues. In relation to the monitoring initiatives, there's a substantial amount of monitoring that and I think the one issue around the good thing about informal settlement upgrading in situ is that the best monitoring mechanism is the community themselves. Because through the processes of steering committees, through the processes of ensuring that one finds that there's a better value for money that results from informal settlement upgrading rather than some of the others. Jim, I'll just ask you on to cover the balance of what I have.
Okay, thank you. In terms of the capacity building program, 5 million rand is a lot to spend on capacity building. But there is no way that one can nominate a municipal official, take him or her to 13 days of capacity building and training, and then say, well, you can't leave for another job. That's one of the disadvantages or advantages, depending on which side of the fence you sit. Anybody can resign from their jobs at any time. It would depend on a particular organization whether they would, for instance, let's say we train some people in Ekurhuleni as part of the pilot project. Ekurhuleni could say to a particular individual, I will send you and I will excuse you from your office for 13 days on condition you will not resign within the next 2 months or 3 months. And that would probably, from a labor point of view, not be inappropriate. But from our side, national department building the capacity of municipal officials, we would not be able to impose any such things. That would be something between an official and the employer and the employee. What we can see, we've only done the one pilot. Even the people who attended this course as part of the pilot project, we had 3 follow-up meetings with Ekurhuleni in the last 2 months in order to initiate phase 2 of the Ekurhuleni project. And suddenly these people are coming to the fore and they know what it's about and they partake in the process and they partake in the meetings. So we've immediately seen the positive results in that sense. What we haven't seen is because the program has not been implemented as yet, we haven't seen necessarily different results on the ground in terms of Ekurhuleni starting to take charge of developing their own plans instead of waiting for the last budget to add to the municipal budget, but really putting their own effort in and just taking that process on their own so that we can move on to other municipalities and those municipalities who have any capacity to take over the job in that particular municipality. Madam Chair, in terms of assisting people to relocate, in certain instances, we would do a plan and indicate your municipality, people will have to be relocated. Do you want us to assist you with the identification of suitable land for relocation, or do you have? Now, the responses are different. In one minute, I would say, well, I've already identified a greenfield site where new development will take place, the relocations will have to go there, or they will say, well, we don't have that. But NUTS as a technical support program would go so far as to liaise with the community on the potential for some or all to have to be relocated in terms of the development of the plan. But physical relocation is not done through us. That's being funded as part of the capital program, as Neville indicated. The tribal land issue has been addressed. The budget, I think the members are correct. We're a bit behind. We would have, taking into account that we currently have 72 million on the department's budget, plus the 20 million, which is given to HDA, which I did not mention there. I don't have control over it, CEO. But there is another 20 million. So in total, it gives us 92 million for the NUP exercise. And the 72, as I indicated, we only have two people. We're trying to implement all these programs, and we are in dire need of capacity. I think we've done well to almost commit 58 million, or 56 million of that. I would have preferred to have been able to say on the 1st of April 2015, I have already committed my whole budget. It hasn't worked out that way, but we're working very hard to have this budget spent by the end of the financial year. As Neville answered the question on the purpose of NUTS, that we are planning technical support program and not a capital program. On the question, how were the municipalities selected? In 2011-2012, we did very, very intensive discussions with, firstly, provinces. Did our own investigation to say, where's the problem in terms of informal settlements? Not necessarily, well, for each municipality, for each community, an informal settlement is a problem. But in terms of a broader government approach, where should we focus initially our efforts? So we did an investigation. We said in these 45 municipalities, this is where 70% of all informally settled households reside. We now increase that to 62, so we estimate currently between 80 and 85% all informally settled households reside in these 62 municipalities. Taking into account that we've included the money towns now, the Marikanas and the Rustenburg, etc., Free State Goldfields, and so on. What we then did was we had very intense discussions between the provinces and the municipalities to say, are you on board? Is this the correct decision? Taking into account limited budgets, limited capacity, what can we focus on and which would be the priority towns? Not only from a technical point of view, also from a political point of view. Where should we place our focus in the first 3 or 5 years? And how would we then move on to cover the balance of the municipalities? So there was a fairly intensive process in order to identify the municipalities. And furthermore, it is now, in each and every municipal case, it's also an intensive process to identify the informal settlements. Just to give you an idea, we had a case in Itikwini. Our whole project was stopped 2 months ago. The councillor said to us, you will not put your foot in Itikwini until you include that informal settlement. Although the 18 that we included initially was a council resolution. Council agreed to include 18 settlements in phase one of the Itikwini process. Two months ago, a councillor came to us and said, I want this informal settlement as part of the process. It's essentially been stopped. We asked the acting DG for condemnation on the service level agreement to add some additional work at a cost of, I think it was only 300,000 rand, on a total contract of some 3.5 million. But it slowed us out because the Queen refuses for for us to carry on. So we have these intensive discussions with municipalities to even identify which settlements must be looked at and planned for as a phase one or a phase two or phase three or whatever the case may be. But you can never prevent things like this happening. Madam Chair, I think we've addressed everything. If there's something that we left out, we'd be happy to respond.
Thank you very much. I just want to make an appeal. One of the things that we have observed as the portfolio committee is that when we do our oversight, when the presentation is done by provinces, we always have to ask the question around the NAP program. It is not embedded in the presentation that they normally do for us until we ask the question and then they will respond. So we really want to ask the national department to assist provinces to make sure that it becomes a norm, that when we go to a certain area, we are presented with a NAP program for that particular province. It must not be a question of asking about it. Because if, remember, we are talking about an area which is very critical to human settlement. And if nobody presents a report or a progress report or not until we act, it's like something is being hidden or there's nothing that is happening on that particular area. So just want to make that appeal. We've been to Gauteng, the same in all the areas that we've been, we have to ask for that program for us to be told what's happening. When we were in Limpopo, the same thing. So we really want to make that special appeal. I know that most of the time when we go to provinces oversight, the senior officials are not necessarily there, but those that are accompanying or are attending in for the national department must make it a point that they assist provinces. That when that presentation is being done, we want that program to be presented. Because then we it would make our life easy to understand and have an understanding of even the budget that we are being told, how then down there in provinces is functioning. If I can just ask that, because it's a special appeal, we will be going to another province that is within a month's time. So that's why I'm raising this question. You want to say something?
Maybe it's just understanding where you come from, given that I was part of Gauteng. I think as the proposal coming from the National Department of the programs that we want to bring in, we have what we are putting together, which we call a comprehensive sector capacity building program. It's identifying the pockets of capacity building that exist across the sector. It talks to the question that Johan has spoken to. But the plea also coming from our side is when we bring it, we are requesting for your support in terms of taking it through. Because you look at the different pockets of capacity, there is an element of capacity, grant funding, which is there in the form of the municipal human settlement capacity grant that goes to municipalities, specifically the aid networks. There is another capacity component which we have included in the USDG grant, which gets dispersed to the aid networks again. There is also still another capacity component within the HSDG grant, which is there in the form of gaps that we give to provinces in terms of packaging the project. And another pocket of capacity existing within the restructuring capital grant is part of the investment component. So we will be coming back with a proposal that seeks to consolidate so that we can be able to offer the right capacity interventions from the national department. Like from what I've been describing, the four grants, they are all going outside, they are not controlled by the national department, so it makes us a little bit weak in terms of coming up with the right interventions when we deal with the issues of capacity. Our issue is that we should not be looking at maybe technical capacity as provided by the service provider that Johan is working with. We should be looking at issues of procedural capacity, which is what the program at the 5 million is geared to. But it should not only be limited that. We should also look at the societal capacity. And your support is part of the political will to make it all feasible within the program. But I think the DG will be coming because we have this other concept, even around the questions that you were asking to say, how do we ensure monitoring? With the other programs that are there in other government departments, you have young professionals being paired with the officials that have it. So as part of the comprehensive capacity building program that I'm talking about, we will be proposing something similar to that, but overall
we are looking at the existing grants, specifically municipal capacity grants, to say let's try and look at it differently so that it creates reforms at a different time. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. And when you do come here, you would also look, tell us how you plan to improve on the capacity of the sector, because obviously there's lack of capacity. Because every time when you are in time to explain, he would say there's only two people that must monitor this process. So when you do come back and come back and explain to us how, therefore, you plan to increase the capacity of the sector. Thank you very much, Michelle. And I think for me, the whole idea of the NAS is that now that it's on the radar, it is going to be something that is going to be standing on with us, that we don't lose sight of the progress program. So be on your toes and be ready, because whenever one progress report, we would always be pleasing and getting. Because for us, it's very important to hear progress around the information program. Thank you very much. That take care of the three reports. The officials may be excused, and thank you very much. There's only one item that we will deal with, which is the minutes, and then the meeting will attend. Otherwise, if you want to speak, you can speak, but otherwise we are just going to have the minutes of the last meeting. Thank you very much. Thank you, honorable members. The first set of minutes, in the minutes of the 26th of May, the meeting was held here in Committee Room 405. It was mainly dealing with Eastern Cape on the plans and the targets. And there was two members present from Eastern Cape that accompanied the province, which was the South. The Papano City Municipality and the Nelson Mandela Bay. 26th April, 2015. That's the first of minutes. Can I move? Can I see a move right in the second? Honorable Ghana is moving. Any second? Honorable Korai has moved. Thank you very much. The second set of minutes is the 2nd of June 2015, which was held in Committee Room 3, Grand Floor 1922, which was dealing with the briefing on the Human Settlement and Executive Leadership and Management Course, which was about that to briefing on the course. Honorable Korai is moving. Any second? Honorable Baker, second. The third set of minutes is the 23rd of June, which the meeting was held in the same venue, which was mainly about the strategy planning, where we were trying to align our strategy. Honorable Menezi is moving. Honorable Baker is second. Thank you very much, honorable members. That takes care of our business for today. And we have a meeting next week. We will communicate to the venue. And thank you very much for being here on time. We will start at 9. You want to start at 10? It's not going to be as expensive as today's meeting. Mm-hmm. Yes, honorable Khan? Mm-hmm. At 10?
Thank you. Yeah. 9 o'clock is fine. 9:30 is fine. I wanted to check with regard to the government awards. Has there been, are we all RSVP there, or we need to do it personally? I wanted to check from the committee staff whether they include RSVP for all of us.
As far as I know, Ms. Garcia had communicated with all of you? Or have you confirmed with her? Those that have confirmed with her, they have not been arrested. Those that have confirmed with her have arrested. I think but as far as I can, everybody is invited, but you're supposed to confirm with her that you are available and then say confirm.
I'm confirming this, but I'm available.
Yeah, we're just waiting for the approval. My matter is, government made awards with number 6 days every year for human settlement. So this year, they're taking place here in, at the ICC Cape Town. That indicates if you are. Yeah, and then we will put it in. Thank you very much. The meeting is at 10.
Thank you.